Before we begin, let's take a moment to put our hands together to worship the Supreme One, the Unvanquished One, the Unparalleled One, the Tathagata, by chanting the Namaskara 3 times all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. With the permission from the Lord Buddha, Dhamma and the Mahasangha, let us begin. If someone was to offer you a solution if someone was to offer you a solution to a problem in your life. Let's take a major problem, some really big problem that you're facing in life. Of course, depending on the problem and depending on how much you are, you know, needing to solve that problem, different people will have different solutions and will be willing to do different things to get there. But if someone was to say, I know that you're facing this X problem, and I can give you a solution. And let's say this X problem is a problem that you have been suffering with for your entire life. For example, let's take a physical one. Let's say you are suffering from a cancer. A terrible cancer. Doctors predict that you only have a couple months left, if you're lucky, maybe just weeks. But if a person was to come to you and say, I have a solution. I can give you some medicine. I have given it to many thousands of people before you, and they've all become cured. They've all cured themselves. I myself used to have something similar, and I had this medicine, and look, I'm still alive. I know you only have a couple months left, but I have the medicine. What would you do? How much are you willing to sacrifice when it comes to your health? How much are you willing to sacrifice when it comes to your health? You have a cancer, only months left, and this person says he has a solution and has evidence of thousands of people. We're willing to give up. It could be anything. You'll ask the person, what is it that you want? Thousands of dollars, is it? What is it that you want? Is it a house, a car? What is it you want? I just want a way to solve. I just want a way to cure this disease that's in me. You're willing to give almost anything away. But this person doesn't ask for anything. This person's willing to give that solution, give that medication for absolutely, how much? Free. Normally when someone gives something for free, we have a doubt, don't we? when something is free, we know there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? We know that there has to be something behind this. So, for example, there are many services that are free. But then there's something, there's an underlying agenda behind it. Although they use it, you use it for free, they are using you for something else. So when the doctor says, you know what, I don't want anything, I'll give it to you for free. All you have to do is take this medication 3 times a day, for as long as you have these symptoms, for as long as you have these symptoms. So I can't tell you whether it's going to take days, weeks, months, or years, but you'll feel these symptoms reduce. But you have to keep taking it until the symptoms have gone. And even if the symptoms have gone, it doesn't matter. You can still keep taking it because it's nothing harmful to the body. You can almost say this is almost the doc. This person is giving a solution. But there's only one problem. Only one problem. This is the catch. No one else can give you this medicine. So they can't give, you know, they can't put it down your throat. Only you can take the medicine all by yourself. They can hand you the pill, they can put it in your hand, they can give you the water, but only you can put that pill down your throat. Only you can put the medicine inside the body. That's the only catch. You know, like in hospitals, if the patient's unconscious, they can find ways to intravenously give you the medicine. But this medicine cannot be taken by anyone else but yourself. That's the only catch. You see, if you have a sickness, if you have this cancer, a terminal cancer, let's say, and someone has told you that this is the solution, what aren't you willing to sacrifice? What aren't you willing to sacrifice? So, for example, you remember growing up, you know, you saw these role models, you know, people who you looked up to and said, you know, they have these sort of things. I'm willing to sacrifice the first 20, 3, 4, 5, 6 years of my life to get the qualifications to become someone like this. You're willing to sacrifice your time. Why? To get the qualifications, to get the position, to get the money, therefore you can do what you want to do. You're willing to sacrifice 25, 26 years of your life. For some, even more. And then once you've done that, then you're willing to sacrifice your time, half, if not all, of your day working for someone else or doing something to collect the money that you need. You're willing to sacrifice your time, the most valuable possession you hold. Because why? You need money to survive. For your family, you're willing to sacrifice, you know, anything that you own just to make your child smile. But when it comes to this cancer, see, the only problem with this cancer is it's there. It's always been there. We've never seen it to be much of a problem. Only here and there does it become a problem. You know, only when you start coughing do you realize that there's something must be wrong. When you start getting a headache, an extreme headache, do you realize something's gone wrong? Unless you have these symptoms, it doesn't feel like an issue. It never feels like an issue. This illness eats up inside of us very quietly. Not just this life. It eats away slowly and slowly and slowly until it's too late. Now, of course, what is this cancer that we're talking about? This cancer is what? This sickness is what? The ignorance that we have inside of us. The ignorance that we have inside of us. Because of the ignorance. Now, when I talk about ignorance, we're not talking about, you know, stupidity. We're talking about not knowing. Not knowing what? Not knowing the truth. In other words, believing or feeling that that something false is true. That's what ignorance is. And once you have ignorance, what happens? Symptoms will arise. What are these symptoms? Sadness, fear, anxiety, stress, strain, frustration. See, we never actually question our life until we find these symptoms unbearable. And what even better is sometimes you don't question, even if it becomes unbearable, we don't question it. Like, when is the last time you questioned your stress? Meaning, I feel stressed. Can I get rid of this? Or why do I feel it and can I get rid of it? We don't really question it. For example, we feel stress. What do? Find ways to relieve it. Not ask where it came from or why it's there. Instead, I feel, let me find a way to forget. I'm angry. Let me find a way to change my attention somewhere else. I feel scared. What can I do to make myself feel safe? Not why do I feel scared? And how can I stop feeling fear? No, what more can I do to suppress the feeling? Because what we always try to do is what? We have symptoms. And all we try to do is to suppress them. For example, let's say, you know, if you want to eat an ice cream, we don't think twice before, you know, finding a way to have ice cream because we don't see it to be a problem. But that is also part of the symptoms. That is also part of the symptoms of this cancer that eats away at us. But a person comes in and tells you there's a solution. There's a way to get rid of it because this cancer has the ability to, it not just has the ability, it does what? Ruin the lives, makes the quality of life of the people who have it detrimental, horrible. And as time goes on, this cancer grows bigger and bigger and bigger. See, as we grow older, as we grow go further from our birthday and closer to our death day. This cancer keeps eating at us. And when it cannot, and as it keeps eating away, the symptoms get worse. The symptoms get worse. Because, for example, you know, remember when you were younger, you could do lots of things. But as you grow older, you know, physically you aren't. So, for example, you know, normally young children have a strange liking for sugar. As you grow older, the amount of sugar you can take will reduce because, you know, the body can't handle it. But the virus, the cancer is still there. So the mind still needs but cannot have. Things that a young child can do, the old body cannot, because it can no longer handle it, because the cancer keeps eating away at the mind. And when that frustration, that mental stress cannot be handled, the cancer will make things happen, make you do things which later you think, ooh, I shouldn't have done that. Why did I say that? That was wrong of me to have done. That was wrong of me to have said. Why did that happen? Because the cancer is creating this. Is creating this environment. So when the person comes up and says, you know, I have a solution, some people think, why do I need a solution? Because they don't see the cancer to be a problem. Because this cancer only has symptoms here and there. This cancer only has symptoms here and there. It's not something that has long-term symptoms, but it comes and goes. Only those who realize they have a cancer was looking for the solution. Only those who realize they have this illness will always try to look for someone to give them the answer to their questions. And so when this stranger comes up and says, oh, wait, I know a way to solve this. I have a medicine. Look, I have given this medicine to these many people and they're all good now. If you want, you can talk with some. They'll point you towards people who have taken the medicine or who are taking the medicine and reducing their symptoms, reducing their cancer. They'll show you, they'll ask you, talk with them, ask them. Thousands of people. In the beginning, you start taking the medicine. Out of trust, out of faith. But also out of understanding. And slowly these symptoms start to reduce. Slowly these symptoms start to If you have an illness, and if every time you take the medicine, your symptoms reduce. So let's say you have an excruciating headache. And every time you took a paracetamol, the headache reduces substantially. Does anyone need to remind you to take the medicine? No, because every time you get the headache, you remember what? Very simple solution, take the paracetamol. Just take the paracetamol, it reduces. Because once you start seeing the symptoms reduce, now you realize that this medicine is the solution. And now you no longer need to be told to take it. Now it becomes a habit. It becomes, you know, so easy. It becomes second nature to us. Now, who is a stranger? This stranger is not a person. This stranger is not a person. Instead, this stranger is a lineage. Lineage that roots from the Buddha himself. The Buddha preaches. His disciples listen. His disciples get the medicine, and what? They cure themselves, or they are curing themselves, and what? They spread. They spread this medicine far and wide. curing as many people as they possibly can. Sometimes people will come to them and ask. Sometimes they will go to people. Sometimes the other person is not willing to take, but the doctor. The doctor waits patiently. The doctor waits very patiently, knowing that one day this patient will need it. You know, have you not seen like little, like small toddlers? You know, I remember seeing a small toddler who was absolutely terrified of the dentist. Why are children scared of a dentist? No clue. But you know, this little child has scared of the dentist. So, their mother taking this child to the dentist was like trying to take a cow to the slaughterhouse. You know, pulling the child, you know, trying to cajole the child, you know, saying that if you go to the dentist, I'll buy you this, I'll buy you that, trying to get the child to sit on that seat. And the mother was telling me that the moment this child was put on the seat, the only thing the child wants to do is to get up and run out. But what does a dentist do? Seeing all this. The dentists wait very patiently. They'll wait very patiently, trying to get the child to calm down. So what do they have? They've got stickers. And they go, you know, I got a sticker. It's for you. But, you know, child, you have to sit down on the seat. Out of great compassion, you know, we'll have a sticker so the child sits. Once a child is sat and they open their mouth, the dentist will only then help the child. You see, it's like that. Sometimes, you know, the doctor will come to you with the medicine. Sometimes you come to the doctor. Sometimes the doctor will just wait. Now, I've heard several horrible stories of young children kicking doctors. Why? Because of fear. For example, I remember one of our monks when he was young, terrified of the needle. Injections were, you know, he would look at it, he couldn't stand the sight of a syringe. Sees a syringe, automatically head goes dizzy, and within seconds, blackout. So when he was younger, when he had to get some sort of injection, probably a vaccine or something or whatnot, and literally he was telling me that, you know, his friends and family had to pin him down. But the moment the doctor came near, unfortunately, his foot had ended on the doctor's face. Out of fear. But what does the doctor do? Doctor waits patiently. Because why? The doctor knows that maybe not now, but later this child will need it. Later this child will accept. So after this person had accidentally kicked the, we'll call it an accident, accidentally kicked the doctor, seeing the syringe faints, and the doctor waits for the child, for this young person to regain conscious, and then gives him the medicine. See, all, you know, this is, but then once you have that medicine, now you won't let it go. Once you have that medicine, you're not going to let it go, because why? It's now solving the problem. It's now solving this deep problem inside of us. Now, you know, once you realize your symptoms are reducing because of this medicine, if someone was to say that medicine is fake, what would you say? I don't know. Maybe it is. However, every time I take it, my symptoms are reducing. every time I take it, this is all like, you know, I'm becoming better. I can feel it. Now no one can change your view on that. You know that by taking this, my symptoms are reducing. Now no one can change your view. Now you don't take this medicine out of faith. Because in the beginning, when you go to a doctor, they give you medicine. You take that out of faith. You take it out of faith that this medicine will cure me. But once it starts helping, do you take it out of faith? No, you now know. And for example, whenever you get a headache, what's the first thing that comes to your head? A paracetamol. In the beginning, you took it out of faith. You know, in the beginning, when you had a headache and your parents came up to you and said, you know, son, daughter, puta, you know, take this paracetamol. This will help. In the beginning, you take it out of faith. And once you take it and it helps, now it's no longer faith. Now it's knowledge. Now headache, paracetamol. So coming back to the original question, if there is this medicine, what will you be willing to sacrifice? You know, once you have found this, now, you know, you're willing to help others as well. See, this is what I love about this. Once you have the medicine, once you found the cure, the next thing that you think is what? How can I give this to others? How can I give this to others? What can I do to help others understand? What can I do to help others get this medicine? Maybe I can't give it to them specifically, but I can create the environment. And that's the beauty of it. That's the absolute beauty of it. Because once you have understood that this is the solution, now you're willing to help others to find the solution itself. So for example, you know, I was told by some of our children that, you know, how much... So for example, in our monastery, we have a school done by our amazing Anagarikas and Sila Sharikas, as well as some of our monks also help out. You know, some of these children tell me stories of how much these teachers would do for them. So in our monastery, we have a school. The teachers, they get paid, right? They get paid. Not with money. But with what? Merits. They do it out of the goodness of their heart. Now, I'm not saying our children are angels. Of course not. But they do it out of the goodness of their heart because they realize what? Maybe I can't give the medicine like this, but I can create the environment for them to give the medicine, for them to get the medicine, and for them to spread the medicine. Like I hear stories every single day of our amazing Sila Shravikas sacrificing every single moment in that kitchen, preparing the things they need for the next day meal. You know, garlic. I was told the other day that they had to, you know, chop mangoes with knives and hammers. Sacrificing their time, energy, to create what? The environment. Because we are all here because of the food that we have. Without food, we won't be able to listen or do anything per se. So they, you know, I get to hear story after story of how much, say, our Sila Shravikas have done daily. I get to hear stories, not just hear stories, I get to see how much our anagarikas and anagarikas do. How much they sacrifice for another. Because why? They have this solution and they want this solution to be with others. Either they'll try to give it to them, or they'll create the environment for it. All because they want another person to feel what they feel. All because they want the other person to have this, have to take a taste of this medicine. That's it. Willing to give up almost everything. Like I say, our teachers in school get paid. Get paid in merits. You know, our Sita Sravikas, you know, once, after chopping all those mangoes, got what? How much did you get paid? I mean, what did you receive except an aching hand? Merits. Because in their minds, their hearts and minds, all they have is what? May the people who consume this find it, you know, be able to find and use this medicine, the medicine of the Dhamma, to cure the cancer of ignorance. May they use this, may they use every, I will sacrifice my blood, sweat, and tears. Why? For another person. To what? Have the opportunity to either take, or no, to take the medicine and relieve their symptoms. And that's a beautiful thing. An absolutely beautiful thing. Something that I remember one of my teachers have said, and it's been something that's been driving me since for a long time. I remember one of my teachers said, dissolve your... Either he had read it in one of, or in a book that he had read in. He read it in one of his books, and it said, dissolve yourself in the service of others. Dissolve yourself in the service of others. And that small saying has way, way more than you realize. Dissolve yourself in the service of others. Although it might be a simple seven-worded phrase, its meaning goes beyond. Each and every one of those words have such a profound meaning. Because when we talk, because if we were to take this phrase and actually break it down, if we took this phrase and broke it down to its components, let's start from the very last word, others. Others. If we even just took the word others, what is other? What is another? Who is another? See, does it give any terms and conditions, so, you know, I'm going to dissolve myself in the service of others, of my people. That I'll only help my people. That I can only help, you know, these, you know, this small amount of people. What is another? Dissolve yourself in the service of others. Who is this other? See, this word other has no boundaries. They say love and compassion starts at home, but also ends at home. Love starts at home and ends at home. So what do we do? Instead of trying to give, have home and give love outwards, we do what? Spread the boundaries of what? Our home. See, when we talk about others, we're not talking about another person per se. Because when you talk about another person, we have certain things, certain factors that we like and dislike. But the word others has none of that. It doesn't matter. See, the word others has what? It doesn't matter whether you're black or white, the color of your skin, what, you know, whether you're male or female or whatever. It doesn't matter whether you're educated or not. It doesn't matter of anything. Other is just in general. Other. And I think Buddhism puts it in, the Buddhist philosophy puts it into better words. Other doesn't mean people either. Other doesn't mean animals. Because if we were to break down the components of who we are, we come up with just two things. A body, and also what? Minds. We come up with two things, a body and mind. So when we talk about others, we're not talking about you or me and other, you know, this person next to me, the person in front of me, the person behind me. The word other has this mind. Has the word mind in it. If you ask the question, whose mind? That question is wrong. Minds. Any mind including what mind? Including the mind that arises here as well. Because when we say the service of others, we always look outside. We always say, you know, if I want to help another person, I'm trying to help another. But that is a mind, this is a mind. We are all minds here. Okay, can we all think? Do we all have the ability to think? Are you sure? Therefore, we can confirm what? We all have what? A mind. We all have the ability to think, to perceive. Therefore, we can confirm we have a mind. The body is, you know, it varies from person to person, of course. But you and I can all agree that a body is what? Made up of? Made up of what? The elements. Elements are made out of protons, neutrons, electrons. Neutrons, electrons are basically what? Energy. So we have body, which is energy, which is what? Different from person to person? Do we have separate energies within us? So do we have his energy, her energy, their energy, Tim's energy, Bob's energy, Harry's energy? Do we have separate energies, or just is it just energy in general? Just energy. Just energy in general. So we can't really separate and say, you know, there are, you know, these sort of energies. No, we have energy that makes up the body, the physical body. And then we have the mind energy as well. That helps arises in the mind. No, not that arises in the mind. That is the mind. That is the mind. So when we talk about others, we're talking about minds. When you see minds, you don't have any discrimination. Because why? A mind is a mind. Whether they're small or big, whether they have a criminal history or not. A mind is a mind, and a mind has the ability to think. Now the word service itself. Also a very big topic, because what is service? when we talk about service, we normally talk about, if we talk about services, what are services? Things that people do to help another in some sort of way, to make another person's life easier. What is the greatest service you can do to another? What is the greatest solution, or what is the greatest service you can do to another? See, I'll give you two scenarios. You're hungry. I prepare food and give it to you. Solution number one. You're hungry and I teach you how to cook. Solution two. Which one's better? One, right? One is so much better. Because why? Because whenever you don't need to do anything, you just sit there. I'll do the cooking and you just sit there and eat. But a problem occurs. What's that? If I get sick, then they're going to have to stay hungry. If say, my arm breaks, then you're going to have to stay hungry. If something happens to me, then you're going to have to stay hungry. So what's the better one? Teaching you how to cook. Because then whatever happens to me, it doesn't matter. Because why? You know how to cook. For as long as I'm here, I can help you. I can cook for you, but you now know how to cook. So if something happens here, I'm okay, because I know that you will what? Be able to cook by yourself. So when we talk about service, we're talking about the service of what? Helping another person understand what? How to be happy independently. How to find unconditional happiness. A happiness that's not conditioned. A happiness that's not dependent on anything or anyone. Because ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know that, your happiness is always dependent on something. Just like if something happens to me, if you don't know how to cook and something happens to me, you're going to have to live in hunger. If your happiness is dependent on someone or something, then if that thing is not there, your happiness cannot be there. So service is the idea that you're helping someone to the absolute maximum, to give them what they need, not what they want. Because if you were to believe that to be of good service, I have to give people what they want, then all children will, be ruined. Because why? What do children want? They have a strong addiction to sugar. So you should be giving them sugar and sugar and sugar and sugar. And then what? Before they reach the age of 15, they die of what? Diabetes. So you give people what they need. You give that mind, not what they want, but what they need. Sometimes they'll need what? A roof over their head. Other times they'll may need what? Clothes over their body. Sometimes they'll need what? Medicines when they're sick. Food when they're hungry. Or maybe a shoulder when they're upset. A shoulder to cry on when they're upset. Maybe just an ear just to listen. However, you know what? While you're listening to them, while you're cooking, you know what? While you're trying to satiate their hunger, to satisfy their thirst, what are you thinking? May they find the way to be truly happy. And then you come to the word, the first two words, dissolve yourself. I think those two words are the absolute, the most beautiful things I can ever think of. Dissolve yourself. Because the word dissolve, can you dissolve something instantly? No, dissolving is a process that takes a bit of time and a bit of energy. Like, for example, when you put, you know, a spoonful of salt into a cup, what happens? Does the salt just go poof and just vanish? No, you take time. You have to mix it to dissolve it. Give it its time and give it its energy. Give it, you know, a bit of TLC and it dissolves. So dissolve yourself. See, when we say dissolve yourself, it has two meanings. And that's what I like about it as well. You can see in two lights. When you say dissolve yourself, it could be, you know, it says if you could take it as the mean as it sorry. You can take it to mean that when you know, when you're doing something to someone for someone else, you know, care, don't think about what's happening to you and help the other person. So for example, if you're hungry and the other person's hungry, dissolve yourself, meaning, you know, I don't have some food and give it to the other person. But the meaning I want you to take from it, dissolve yourself. The feeling, this yourself is what? Yourself. Your ego. Your pride. Your jati. Dissolve it. Because, ladies and gentlemen, you can only truly help another person if what? You dissolve yourself. You can only truly help a person only when you dissolve yourself. Because, you know, we say we do things out of love. You know, mom, your mother, your father will do things out of love. You know, a person will truly love you and will do things out of love. If you really think about it, and this is not me like undermining love or saying that love is horrible or love is cheap or anything. No, I just want you to think about it. Love, when you say, you know, when someone does something out of love, is it because they truly love that person? Or is it because they love what that person gives them? That's the question. That's the question. Because to dissolve, you know, to do something and to dissolve yourself requires you to understand what? The truth of the world. Requires you to understand the truth of the world. Because, you know, when we say that, you know, I'm doing, you know, say a mother will help the child because of love. That is true, but that love is also conditioned, is it not? It's conditioned in a certain way. For example, that, you know, if I was to switch the child around. So for example, let's say there's a mother. Mother, child. The mother will do something for the child. But it's very conditional. Why? If I was to change the child and say instead of child A, we took a random other child and put it here. Will the mother do it do the same things with the same amount of love? No. But you can say it's because, no, because, you know, this is her child, Therefore, she loves only her child. What happens if this child doesn't do anything for, I mean, you know, doesn't do anything for the mother? So, for example, the, you know, again, I'm not trying to undermine this, but, you know, you can, if you relook at it, the bond that a mother and a child will have is a bond out of expectation. It's a bond that is rooted in expectation. The mother will expect. If the expectation is fulfilled, the mother feels happy and therefore the love strengthens. If the child doesn't fulfill the expectation, then there's a drift and that love will start to stretch. It's conditional, absolutely conditional. Again, it's not saying anything about mother's love, because mother's love is one of the most deepest rooted things down this, in this world. They say that it's something that penetrates, you know, the skin, the muscles, the bone marrow, but it's also very conditional. Well, you know, I mean, dissolve yourself. The only time you can actually do this is if you understand, if you dissolve your ego, dissolve your pride. Dissolve yourself in the service of others. Dissolve. Let it slowly, slowly dissolve. I mean, it's an absolute beautiful, beautiful thing. So, you know, work according to it. Whenever you do something, you know, see it in that light. See it in that light. Because normally when we help someone, the first thing that comes to our head is, what will they do for me? What do I benefit out of this? What do I gain from this? You know, sometimes we expect just a simple smile, that's enough. We help someone in expectation of their smile. We give them a compliment expecting that they will give us a compliment. We would lend them money in hope that when we are in need, they will what? Lend us money. Always with, you know, always this, you know, you can't truly do it without what? Truly understanding. Now the question is, understanding what? What is it that we need to understand here? So, I want to stray away from this this for a bit and take a few and start talking about what is it that we need to understand? What is it that we need to see? In other words, we talk about this contemplation and how what we need to do contemplate. Let's ask ourselves, what is it that we need to contemplate about? Okay. What is contemplation? What is contemplation? Contemplation is this inner discussion you have within yourself. Sometimes it's words, sometimes it's just a feeling. But it's an inner discussion that you have with yourself. You know, you all have an inner voice, right? Right? You know, you talk in your heads. Contemplation is when you use that inner voice to fight against your own defilement here. do to see the world as it truly is. Now, when does this inner voice turn off? When does this inner voice turn off? Very rarely, if you think about it, if you actually really think about it, this inner voice is always working. So this inner voice can happen, well, this inner voice can be used at what sort of times? At any time. From early in the morning until you go to sleep, the inner voice is 90%, 99% on. So when we talk about contemplation, what we're saying is using this inner voice to see or to understand the reality of things. So for example, let's say you wake up in the morning. As you wake up in the morning, what should you do? As your inner voice turns on, ask yourself, what is that's happening? Ask yourselves, who woke up? Show yourself that this waking up is a process. That is the truth that we have to show it. That is the truth that we have to show to ourselves. Who is the one waking up? So, I was having a discussion with one of my teachers the other day, and an interesting thing that we talked about is this. When you are given a responsibility, what do you normally do? We start to live in this responsibility, living in the future about, what will happen. So for example, let's give a small responsibility. Let's say I give you the responsibility of keeping this room clean. Where does your mind now go? Okay, so that means I have to clean this, I have to sweep this, I have to wipe this, I have to do this, I have to do that. And then it gets dirty, and then when it gets dirty, I have to do that, this, I have to do this. And now the mind is using its thinking ability to plan out what is going to happen. But the planning is not the issue. There's an issue there. You start to believe that this is what's going to happen. So for example, this place is going to become dirty. And when it's going to become dirty, I'm going to have to sweep. And to take a sweep, I'm going to have to find the broom. The broom should be somewhere around here. And this has to happen, that has to happen. And now you are living and planning for the future. But not just planning. You truly believe that that's what's going to happen. And so next Sunday there's going to be a program like this. So I have to arrange the chairs like this. And now not just that you are planning. You believe that that's something that's going to happen. But all you have to do is what? All you have to do is make sure this room is clean for a week. Why? Because next week, it could be someone else. So today is you, tomorrow it's that. It's him or her. Today it's you. For next week, it'll be someone else. All you have to do is what? Keep this place clean for what? A week. So Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, Sunday. Next week could be someone else. If you see it like that, now in your mind, although you plan, so you'll say, next week, next week Saturday, there'll be a program like this. And you now know. But you're not worried because you know what? That's going to be someone else's responsibility. So I'm planning for them, but whether they execute it or not, that's them. So we think so far ahead, thinking we are the one who's going to be able to, we are the one who's going to do this. But all we have to do is get through the week. But even that's very macro. See, you don't need to keep this place tidy for a week. A day is enough. Just keep it tidy for a day. Since the morning to the night. Because tomorrow, who knows? It could be you, it could be someone else. All we have to do is what? We have to just keep this place clean for just what? A day. All you have to do is fulfill your responsibility for what? A day. All you have to do is work for what? A day. Tomorrow? Tomorrow? I can plan for tomorrow, but who's cleaning? Could be me, could be someone else. But when I get to tomorrow, then I can either do the plan or change the plan. But here's the thing, you know, we take this and we believe that, you know, I'm the one who's going to clean. This entire week it's me, or it's my now responsibility, so I'm going to have to clean it every single week. But all you have to do is clean it for a single day. Everything else is part of your imagination. You are imagining that you'll be cleaning next week, but who knows? Imagine a person walking from A to B. Imagine the person, this person walking from A to B. Already in your mind, hasn't this person gone to B now? In your mind already, hasn't this person already gone to B? But this person hasn't even started yet. It's just on A. But when I say the person goes from A to B, your mind automatically says what? Okay, then A goes from this to there. Mid-journey, person A becomes hungry and therefore goes to C now. Now you think what? Wait. The person was supposed to go from what? A to B. And now you've already created that expectation that A to B, it has to be to B. So when the person goes to C, now it goes beyond, it's going astray from your expectation. Now you become not upset as in like, oh no, what this, but you're going, he's supposed to go to B. For example, when you think about your day, you automatically have a specific plan on exactly how everything is going to work out. You have an idea of how the day is going to be. However, you have no clue. You make a plan, but not just a plan. You fix this plan to your day. And when something doesn't go to the way you planned, now you feel upset. But really, all you have is what? This person, will they go to B? At this moment, will they go to B? We don't know. When the causes align. See, as you're walking from one place to another, understand. So for example, after this sermon, you'll have a Buddha Puja and then you'll have discussion at 12. So at 12 o'clock, you have to come here. So if B is here and you're now in the Dhamma hall, you think what? Okay, at 12 o'clock, I have to be here. You automatically project yourself and saying that I will be here at 12. But the amount of factors that have to come into play, the amount of things that have to come, because you only have a moment at a time. Everything else is what? A projection in the future. You believe that you are the one who's going to come here at 12 o'clock and sit down and talk and have these discussions. But in reality, all you have is this moment. So as you're walking here to the Dhamma hall, do you see yourself in the Dhamma hall? If so, there's a problem. Again, you can plan. Planning is okay. But you're not the person who's going to get to there. Because why? A mind arises, the mind passes. For example, you're expecting to go to the Dhamma hall. As you're going midway, you fall and trip. And therefore, you take 180 degrees and you go to the hospital now. So, what happened to the plan of you going to the Dhamma hall? What happened to that? That plan? What happens to that? It didn't occur. Should you be, you know, devastated that you weren't able to do it? No, the causes didn't align. See, as you are walking, think about it. Every step you take, do you predict that you're taking the next step? Every step you take, aren't you predicting the next step? Don't you know exactly where your foot's going to be? You do. You think, okay, I'm going to put my foot here. Then I'm going to put my foot there. Then I'm going to put my foot there. And every step you take, you're now predicting that you're going to take the next step. But who knows? You take the next step, your ankle, something happens to your ankle, and now something else happens. You fall down. So although let's say, again, coming to the example of cleaning this room, although you may believe that you have to clean this room for the rest of your life, all you have to do is keep it clean for a day. Because that's all there is, a day. But even that's way too macro. You can make that even more micro. You just need to keep it clean for how long? This very moment. Because our mind projects itself to the future and believe this is what's going to happen. And suffers. So let's say, for example, our teachers in our school. Next Monday you have what? Lessons. Do you really? How do you know? How do you know next Monday you'll have lessons? What happens if something goes wrong? Let's say suddenly there's a message saying on Monday school is cancelled. But right now you believe what? On Monday I'll be going to school. That is part and parcel of what? Your imagination. That's part and parcel of what? Your imagination. You're imagining. Because all we have is this moment. Now, then you can come to this idea. Then what is planning? Planning is entirely imagination, right? Of course. You can only plan if you imagine the future. Planning is imagination. So is planning wrong? Is planning bad? It's imagination, it's not real. Is planning bad? Planning is not bad, but the idea that this plan, this is what's going to happen. Or plan and you not knowing that plan is an imagination, that's what's wrong. Instead, what is it? Instead, if you realize that this is part and parcel of an imagination, now you're not affected. Like I said, you make a plan for tomorrow, and let's say the person next to you is doing that plan. You all know how plans change, right? I don't think I've ever had gone through a plan A to B, A to Z, going through every single letter. Every time I've ever planned for something, something changes in this. But that's fine. Because why? every moment, all we have to do is complete this moment. So going from here to the Dhamma Hall, you can't go to the Dhamma Hall. All you can do is what? Take a single step forward. Whether you go to Dhamma Hall or not, that is your imagination. That is part and parcel of your imagination. All you can do is take a single step. Whether if you think about it, this is something you can think of every moment. If I took this leaf, how long will this leaf be in my hand? Already you've predicted something. You already have an idea on how long this leaf has been and will be in my hand, because that's part of your imagination. So if you were to see me scrunch this up and rip it apart, if that's not something that you expected, you now think, what? That's not right. That shouldn't be like that. Because I'm going beyond what you expected. Therefore, now you're disappointed or you're upset or frustrated or whatnot. But if you see this to be what it really is, at this moment, it's a leaf. Next moment, who knows? See? This moment, it's a leaf. The next moment, can't it become anything? If the causes come together, for example, if I put a certain chemical onto this, in front of your very eyes, this can become brown. In front of your eyes, you'll watch it, you'll keep seeing it, you'll be seeing green, 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 brown. But you expected what? To see just green, 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 green. But when it turns brown, because why? At this moment, this is the effect. The next moment, you're imagining it. Next moment is part of your imagination. Why do you believe that that's what's supposed to happen? That's why sometimes we can't accept things. That's why we can't accept things when something breaks. Like, for example, if this was to shatter on the floor, why do you feel hurt? If this was to fall and shatter onto the floor, why do you feel hurt? Because what did you imagine? Even the idea of falling? If I was to drop this, you automatically expect what? It to fall and break. You automatically make an imagination saying what? This saucer is going to fall and break. How do you know? Maybe I have an invisible string onto this, so just centimeters off the ground, I can take it back up. But you've already made the imagination thinking what? It's going to fall and then it's going to break. I mean, that's why people find it really unusual when things, don't behave the way they should. So surprised. So for example, there are some bottles that if you were to hit on the floor, no matter how hard you hit, it doesn't break. But if you were to put something very small inside it and just give it a shake, it shatters. And you think, what? What? How can that be? That's not possible. You know, it's supposed to be, you know, they threw it on the ground. It didn't break. They only put a small bit of small metal bit inside and took it and shook it a bit and it shatters. That can't be. That's because you're projecting the future. See, you'll be having lunch soon, right? When you have lunch, every mouthful you take, aren't you predicting the taste? So for example, let's say they have dal and soya and melum. You automatically have an idea what it tastes like. You automatically know exactly how it tastes like. But in reality, it can taste completely different. That's the thing, if you have a plate of food in front of you, you've already eaten it before you started. You've already consumed the entire food from start to end, the carrots, the salad, the dal, everything you've already consumed before you even touched it. Consumed where? In the mind. You already imagined what it tastes like. But so when you take every bite, you're now comparing it with what? Your imagination. See, when you are eating, this is the thing. When you are eating, this is why you should have your internal voice turned on. A lot of people come and complain, saying, "I mean, you know, my mind doesn't. You know, it goes everywhere. You know, this internal voice is doing lots of things." I'm saying the internal voice is a good thing. That is your contemplation. So as you're eating, let the internal voice ask, wait, am I expecting to taste soya now? If you taste soya, then why did you taste soya? Is it because you expected? No, because why? When the causes came together, when the food particles, your tongue, the mind, the brain, all comes together, tasting happens. Tasting happens. Why did it happen? Because you wanted it to? No, because the causes came together. The next bite, you're expecting soya, now you taste mangoes. Why did that happen? Because the causes came together to give rise to that effect. If you want... Do you know what the best way to take a lot of different tastes? You know how you can go to like a buffet and you know you can like serve yourself and you have like different sorts of things and you can put it all in one plate and you can eat it, right? I can tell you a way to get thousands of more different tastes. How? If you go and pin the bada, if you go an arms round, I can promise you, you'll never get the same taste twice. I can guarantee. It's like endless flavors. Why? Because every bite you take is what? A different causes, different effect. Different effect. So if you eat in expectation, well, understand that that expectation will not be filled. You're going to get some sort of taste. See, this is the thing. This is contemplation. You have to take what you... Take this idea and let your inner voice talk. Your contemplation should be, you preaching to yourself. Your contemplation is you preaching to yourself. As you see, as say for example, let's say you walk past a tree. Let your inner voice preach. Do I see a tree here? It was at the tree that I saw yesterday. Come back to the walking, because this idea came, right? Walking is a movement, right? Walking is a type of movement, right? Right? No, it isn't. It's the movement that we call walking. Not walking is a type of movement. No, movement. That movement is called walking. Because what we try to do is we take the effect and we see the causes. And we say that, there's many types of movements. Walking is one of them. However, the movement that's happening as you go is called what? Walking. Our mind, because if I took a photo of a person, now excuse my drawings. My drawings are amazing. What is this stick figure doing? What is this stick figure doing? Give it some ground. It looks like it's... What?
Running?
I was trying to make it fall. But hey, it's running. No, it's tripped over something. It's tripped over its own legs. It's walking. How do you know what it's doing? How do you know? At this moment, how do you know what it's doing? You don't. Because it's a singular moment. The next moment? This will move this way a bit more, and its legs have changed, and our hands will change. And then you'll say, okay, this and that, then it looks like they must be... And now you're coming to a conclusion. But for a single moment, can you tell me what this person's doing? Can you say that this person is walking, running, falling, flying? Can you tell me that? We can't. We can't. We have no idea. But our mind predicts that from here... This person's not going to move the next step. So, all we have to do is we have to just let our inner voice talk. Using the Dhamma it knows, using the Dhamma it understands, to let it talk and let it preach to you. Have your internal discussions, have your internal debates. When you see these flowers, if you see a bunch of flowers, a bouquet of flowers, ask yourself, where is the bouquet? In which flower is there the bouquet? In the white ones? In the purple ones? In the yellow and pink ones? In the leaves? Where is the bouquet? If you feel that the bouquet is here, there's an issue. If you realize that a bouquet, that feeling of a bouquet is in the mind, then all we do is really get it to understand reality. And understand the other way as well. The reason why we feel that there's a bouquet of flowers here is because of what? Ignorance. Because of what? Ignorance. So yeah. All we have to do is we have to let our inner voice talk. at the more you allow it to preach to you, the more you, and the more time that you give it time to preach, the more better it will come at preaching to you. Like I said, beginning it'll be just words. And then it'll be a feeling. Until then, just preach to yourself. To show yourself the true nature of everything around you. That from the moment you wake up to brushing your teeth, to having breakfast, to coming, you know, wearing whatever you're going to wear, to going to wherever you're going to go, to sitting down, to standing up, to lying down, to, you know, the sweeping, to, you know, turning on a switch, to anything. Just show yourself the reality. Show yourself the anicca, dukkha, anatta. Ness. The anicca, dukkha, anattaness. Nature. That's all. That's all we have to do. Because then the mind, I mean, that is the medicine. That is the medicine. Then the mind will now start to do what? Start to no longer require, no longer require what? Looking for the solution elsewhere. Now it's found the medicine for the cancer. Now you know it no longer needs anything else. Now it just keeps on taking this medicine. And the cancer is what? Solved. Cured. And one day, you'll come up and say what? Kina jati. I've done what needs to be done. I've completed it. I now see everything in the lens of anicca, dukkha, anatta. I understand that something that these are what? Imaginations. I truly understand. And then it's over. Then we know. You're cured. And then your teacher will tell you what? Do. Do what? Spread. Okay. So we have some reminders. So we have the Buddha Puja and the discussions today. As well as on the 30th, we have our Vesak program. So please do join, and please do help out with any of the meritorious activities we have to help out with that. I got to see some of the plans, and I have no idea how our decoration team can come up with such amazing ideas. The things our decoration team does for the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha is incredible. I don't get to see the whole plan. One of the lead decorators had a book, and he showed me the book, and I was confused on how the idea arose, number two, how they're gonna make this idea into reality. But we have all you amazing people to help out as well. So join in the meritorious activities, you know, help out. Gain as many merits as you possibly can. Because especially on the Vesak day. Vesak is one of the most... When I say the most, I know, imagination. But it's one of the most important days, right, in the Buddhist calendar. So please do join in and do as much merits as you possibly can. Don't miss out. Do we have any other messages? Oh, also something that I did want to also add is that our amazing Sila Shravakas, I miss out on this. I get to hear, you know, they go to every other week. Yeah, every other week they go to Dambulla. And the amount of stuff that they do. I mean, every time they come back from Dambulla, we are terrified. Terrified. We have no idea what they're going to bring back. Sometimes kilos and kilos of bananas and what else? Of fruits and vegetables. It's scary to see how much work they do. And all that bears fruit. As well as, you know, we have certain projects. We have our greenhouse projects, which is also very scary because why? There are going to be lots and lots of... Imagination. I don't know, you know, it's an imagination. But if everything goes to plan, well, that means that, you know, there'll be lots of different activities, lots of different mentors activities that we can all help out with. Yes, it's imagination, I know. Wataka for years to come. Hey ho, it's imagination. But it's a mentor's activity. I mean, it's the thing. Once we have the truth, the next thing we think about is, what? How can I spread this far and wide? How can we spread this to others? How can we help other people? Again, what are you willing to sacrifice for others? Dissolve yourself in the service of others. Absolute beauty. So yeah, we have a greenhouse project going on to feed every single person that comes through our gate. I think that's also a very beautiful thing because every week we have thousands of people who come through that gate and none of them leave with an empty stomach. As far as I know, I don't think I've ever heard of a story of a person ever leaving with an empty stomach. We always let them leave with a stomach full of rice or roti, doesn't matter, something. Dissolve yourself in the service of others. So I think some of you can also help out with our Dambulla project as well. As well, there are many other small meritorious activities you can all help out in. Because we have only two things here in the monastery. Meritorious activities and Dambulla. Nothing else. Okay, let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude today's sermon. Let's take a moment to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirit, listening Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how very fortunate we are to be in receipt of Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's chant for the merits of the Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to a generation of the Lomo lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, and to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to chant some merits we require to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all chief leaders of our chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them we the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come in or shine. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to Guru Sananse, as well as other monks within the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to spread the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby translating sermon, share them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also transfer merits to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha shelter, alms, roads, medicines, as well as those who pass in their no-hacks and their well wishes. May the power of the merits,
may they abstain from other meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer our merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, and nieces, our elders, friends, and acquaintances, employees, and employees, and to all those who helped us, supported us, assisted us in shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical or mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to Devas, Brahmas, spirits, demons, primary Sakadevas, humans, golden deities, who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambhu Sasana. Let's not forget among them will be our garden deities, who keep watch for us and keep out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors, who have predeceased us, to all that has been friends and family to us in this even long journey in samsara. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those lost life. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to the armed forces as well as the police force, who have sacrificed their lives to protect peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost life in the world be the friend of foe, rejoicing in the merits of quite a day. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost life in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this even long journey in samsara. May the power of the merits, if any of them have been born in the woof planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from meritorious deeds. Fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, it's all resolved, may the power and the blessing of all the merits acquired throughout the day. We've been a witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat nuances, Arhat Mahi nuances, in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired of the day. May you and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arhat Nuvanse or an Arhat Mahi Nuvanse in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all.